This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Etopia Media Medical News Network. We're about to speak to Leon Cass, who's a fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and is also the chair of the President's Council on Bioethics. Welcome to Etopia Media Medical News Network.
Nice to be with you, Mr. Strassman.
Why don't you give us a little bit of background on the President's Council on Bioethics, where it came from, what its mission is?
The President's Council on Bioethics was created by President Bush, announced its creation in 2001 in connection with his stem cell policy speech. We actually began work in January of 2002. We exist to advise the President on the ethical and policy issues that are created by advances in biomedical science and technology. Although we're in the public mind associated with stem cell research, we are in fact charged with a very broad mandate to conduct fundamental inquiry into the human and moral significance of these technological advances.
Give us just a little background on what some of the other non-stem, we're going to be talking almost exclusively about stem cells here,
right.
But what are some of the other topics that the Council on Bioethics deals with?
We issued a report on human cloning and human dignity. We issued a report called Beyond Therapy, Biotechnology and the Pursuit of Happiness, the use of drugs, genetic manipulation, and other things, not simply to cure disease, but to go beyond normal toward human enhancement. We've done a report on the regulation of biotechnologies at the beginning of life. We exist in a climate in which we have many presidential commissions that come and go, but the nation has absolutely no institutional system of monitoring and overseeing and regulating these new biotechnologies that promise to alter and to some degree transform human beings and human nature itself.
Okay, before we talk more about bioethics, give us just a little bit of your own professional background and what you did to end up as chair of the President's Council on Bioethics.
I was originally trained in medicine at the University of Chicago, took a PhD in biochemistry at Harvard, did biochemical and molecular biological research at the NIH. 35 years ago, I took 1 year leave of absence to be the staff person of a council much like mine. That one was at the National Academy of Sciences, and we published a report on assessing biomedical technologies. Since that time, I've written off and on bioethical issues. I've taught in the Committee on Social Thought in the College at the University of Chicago, mostly philosophical texts, and my own work has gone from doing science to thinking about its human meaning. I think I got this job because I've been, for my entire professional life, an opponent of human cloning, first writing about it in 1967 after the frogs were cloned. And I was doing some lobbying, quite frankly, on behalf of congressional legislation that would ban human cloning of all sorts in the United States. I think I came to the attention of people in the White House. They were more interested in the stem cell question. I was more interested in the cloning issue. And when the president asked me would I be willing to serve as the chairman of this council, was a responsibility and an honor that I simply could not refuse, having spent all my life trying to get these issues greater public visibility and public attention.
Okay, let's address several aspects of this question. What is bioethics exactly, and how is bioethics pursued? And you can take either the general case or some specific examples that you're dealing with here. In other words, what combination of lab work and thinking goes into bioethics?
That's a wonderful question, Mr. Strassman, and there is no set answer. This was a field that did not exist till 35 years ago, and it was created by a group of people who were not obviously trained in bioethics, but were trained in medicine or in science or theology or philosophy or sociology or political science. I was myself a founding fellow of the Hastings Center, which is the nation's first sort of bioethics think tank and research institute. And basically, bioethics is an area of inquiry that looks at the ethical and social issues that are generated by new developments in biology, medicine, and biotechnology.
So it's subject matter are new biomedical technologies,
or not only the new ones, but I
or old old ones.
A broader view would say, well, questions of the ethics of healthcare is a bioethical issue.
Where Hippocrates taught first do no ill, that's bioethics.
This is bioethics as well.
Okay.
But I think what gave the field its new start was the project for the mastery of nature, for the improvement of human life, was beginning to come home to work upon the human being itself. And it was the realization that through genetic technologies, through psychopharmacology, organ transplantation...
Louise Brown being the first IVF child.
She was the first IVF baby,
right,
in 1978. There were issues that actually got the field going on the use of human subjects in research. There were these outrageous practices at Tuskegee and at Willowbrook. And in fact, the articles in the 1960s insisting on informed consent for human subjects research was one of the things which gave this field its launch. The question, in a way, is what do you need to do to be a bioethicist?
Right.
And I don't have a good answer to that. The field has become somewhat professionalized, and people get PhDs in this subject. But it's one thing to sort of learn and study the issues and be able to articulate what they are. It's quite another thing to try to make progress on them and to think clearly. And this is a pluralistic society with many different ethical viewpoints. And
given that, is there a unified bioethical ethic? Do all bioethicists subscribe to the same principles, or are there...
Oh, absolutely not.
How then is something's bioethics determined?
Well, look, it's a very good question. I mean, how do we determine? How do we come to some kind of conclusion about various other kinds of contested ethical issues,
right,
in our society? There's some people who think that all we can do is agree to disagree. There are other people, myself included, who think that look. In most serious discussions, serious people on opposite sides have something vital to defend and have at least a portion of the truth that should be contended with. Some issues, like the moral status of the human embryo, are sort of like Solomon's baby. You sort of can't split the embryo down the middle and say, I'll do research on half of it, and the other I will treat as if it's a baby.
Right.
There are some intractable questions like that.
Okay, we're probably going to get to some of them here.
Right.
Go ahead.
But on the more general point, and speak now about the council, we are a council on the subject of bioethics, but we are not a council of bioethicists,
okay,
although three or four of us have been in this field and are even members of the Hastings Center and have been writing in this subject. What this council suggests is that these are deep and difficult and important questions for our society, and that what we really need is an open and engaged pursuit of wisdom and prudence about these matters, and we are going to take whatever help we can get in thinking about them, and to make sure that we don't simply cheat by producing a spurious consensus. We were originally designed for disagreement. We have built into this council people of known to be conflicting points of view, including differences of opinion about the embryo or even about assisted suicide and euthanasia.
Okay, we're going to deal with that in some of its specifics, but why don't we go back to 2002? The council put out a report called Human Cloning and Human Dignity, an Ethical Inquiry.
Right.
And one of the principal accomplishments of that document was set out in Chapter 3, about terminology. And before we go on, I wanted you to stress the importance of clear, honest nomenclature in the whole discussion. You make the point, or the authors of that report make the point, that rather than referring to the different kinds of cloning as reproductive cloning and therapeutic cloning, and having to explain there's one kind of cloning, somatic cell nuclear transfer, which either becomes reproductive or therapeutic depending on what happens to the clone, that you want to talk about cloning to produce children and cloning for biomedical research and make sure we understand what the differences are and take the discussion from there. What's involved with that, both on the philosophical question of what to call things and the specifics of what the difference between those two types of cloning is?
Yeah, thank you very much, and I really appreciate the question and the thoughtfulness behind it, because as everybody knows, how one thinks about what's better and worse or right and wrong in moral discussion depends a lot and even decisively on how the question is framed and how you describe what it is you're doing. And I'm very troubled by the degree to which a certain kind of
semantic creep
has now has sort of obscured the moral issues that we face. This has been going on for some time, and I think it's terribly important that whichever way one finally decides to go, that we not hide from ourselves the actual moral question that is before us. So, to take the cloning issue head on, the act of cloning, the act that creates the clone, whether human or other, is the initial step in which an unfertilized egg has its own nucleus removed and the cloned embryo is produced by introducing into it a nucleus from a somatic cell from a donor. The result would be what my colleagues sometimes call a clonote, the functional equivalent of a zygote or of a fertilized egg. And everything that happens thereafter isn't cloning, because the thing which produces the genetic identity to the donor is that very first step. What happens then, as you know, is that this initial clonote, if it succeeds, will be grown up to the blastocyst stage, where it is a cloned blastocyst, in a clonal relation to the donor of the somatic cell nucleus. At that point, depending upon the human intention, it could either be transferred to, in the human case, a woman's uterus to try to produce a child, or it could be used in research, especially disaggregated, to try to harvest from its stem cells, the very thing which the Korean and American scientists reported doing at somewhat greater efficiency just last week. The Council, in its cloning report, and it is very proud of that terminological chapter, went through a very careful analysis to say that honest assessment says that the initial product of this somatic cell nuclear transfer, the transfer of the somatic cell nucleus into the egg, the product of that transfer is a living human embryo, and is a clone in that it stands in clonal relation to the donor of the somatic cell nucleus. That doesn't settle the moral question.
No, it really just prepares the way for discussion of the,
exactly,
of the choices.
And to say that what this is nuclear transfer or nuclear transfer product, or to deny that this is stem cells or cells is to obscure completely the kind of moral issue by transforming the description of the reality involved.
Okay, and we're not going to do that. The original set of questions that I prepared about a week ago spent a lot of time talking about some important issues, but in light of what happened or what was announced by the Korean American team last week, in terms of their cloning for biomedical research advances,
right.
I wanted to focus on that and its impact, and maybe if we've got some time in the future, we can go into some more leisurely detail about some of these other questions. But how important in the technical process and how important in the ethical process is what was announced by the Koreans last week in terms of what it might change and what it leaves unchanged in the environment?
Well, I think the Korean scientists had already announced the successful production of cloned human embryos back in the beginning of 2004. Dr. Huang had reported that then. The major impact of the new report, and by the way, there are American scientists involved in this study, though they're lying low because I think they don't particularly want the fallout.
That would be Gerald Shatton.
This is Dr. Shatton,
right.
The major difference between that first report and this one is that they now have improved the efficiency of the procedure, that rather than several hundred donated or perhaps purchased human oocytes, they've now got the number down to somewhere between 15 and 20 eggs per successful derivation of a cloned stem cell line. That's still a rather high number, and these are women who are going to need a lot of women volunteers to donate eggs for research of no immediate benefit to them.
Okay, I've been doing a number of interviews about the ethics of egg donation,
right.
Including one with Mildred Cho at Stanford a few days
right.
ago. Let me ask you one specific question about that.
Please.
In terms of ethics of egg donation. Do you think that egg donating women should have medical conditions noticeably created by the hyperovulation treatments that they go through in order to generate those eggs? Should those be covered by the organizations that they're donating the eggs to, do you think, as a matter of policy?
You mean, should the organizations that receive the benefit of these eggs actually insure and protect the women against any side effects or untoward consequences?
Yes, and cover all of their medical expenses should any of those develop?
I would certainly think so.
Okay.
I mean, I don't want to say that people cannot freely donate their tissues for research. I don't somehow think that it's necessarily an abuse of women. Women are free agents and can volunteer.
Do you believe, in order to maintain that the principle should be that they ought not, that women who donate eggs ought not to be compensated for research purposes, ought not to be compensated monetarily for their donations?
The National Academy's report has said that they should be compensated for their time and burden.
Right.
That can be a euphemism if the number gets, you know, quite high. Obviously,
right.
The donation of ova is a much more burdensome procedure than, say, the donation of sperm.
Right.
I also don't think, quite apart from the burden to the women, I don't think we want to get into the circumstances where we really are buying and selling human tissue in this way.
Is there much of a problem from an ethical point of view in Europe, or is it more of a sort of logistic question that women can get $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 for contributing an egg to a fertility clinic,
right?
And they're not entitled under some of these situations to get any money besides their expenses.
For the
is that going to have any? Is that ethical, and is that likely to cause a scarcity of donated eggs to research?
Yeah, no, I think it is likely to cause some kind of restriction of the supply. The IVF clinics have been advertising, some of them in college campuses, the elite schools, up to $50,000 for egg donation.
Right.
I think what's happened here is, in the cloning research, where the women will not, there's been a kind of almost hypersensitivity to the egg procurement question, at Harvard, for example, where the faculty and the board of overseers approved the scientists' proposal to do cloning research at Harvard, with the objections to the slippery slope arguments not counting for very much, the whole process was held up because in every hospital they wanted to do this, the institutional review boards with lots of women represented were very sensitive on this particular issue. I think this is a
sensitive in the direction that they wanted the women paid, or sensitive that they didn't want to make sure they weren't, so that poor women weren't shanghaied into the process.
The latter. I mean, that this looks dangerously like exploitation of women generally, not for their benefit, and exploitation of poor women in particular. These complicated questions. I think that independently of the feminist argument or of the concern about economic exploitation, there's also the question as to whether we want to become a society in which there is overt buying and selling of human organs. We don't allow it. We don't allow buying and selling of human organs for transplantation. And we've at least preserved a certain delicate boundary between paying for services treating the human body as commodifiable parts.
Okay. Let me ask you now to address an issue that the president has addressed this morning by bringing some children who had been born from adopted embryos to the White House. What's your view on what ought to be done with the 400,000 so-called surplus embryos that now are frozen in IV clinics around the U.S.?
Boy.
Apart from being more careful in not producing so many extra.
Well, that by the way, that's not an irrelevant consideration.
Right.
And there is research going on in the freezing of oocytes, which has been a big problem till recently.
Right.
If it turns out to be possible to freeze oocytes, there will be no spare embryos produced. You will freeze the oocytes, thaw them, and use them as necessary.
Right.
And that would be a great step forward on multiple grounds.
So that would even strand those 400 legacy embryos even further.
Perhaps even further.
Well,
this is a very complicated question for me, and I don't have a simple and obvious answer.
Okay.
And maybe I should just leave it at that.
Okay.
The fact that
if you do, we're going to move on to even more ethically difficult questions. But
let me leave it at that because there are other things.
Okay.
There are other things I think that are probably more urgent that we should save time for.
Okay. There's a bill. Now that the South Koreans have more or less successfully demonstrated their ability to do cloning for therapeutic, cloning for biomedical research.
Right.
Does that sort of, and the big debate now in Washington is over the GET Castle bill, which was passed in the House yesterday by a non-veto-proof majority,
right,
and goes to the Senate. The president has said he'll veto if it's passed. Is this kind of a fighting over last year's battle? Wasn't the purpose of mostly of doing the kind of this isn't cloning for anything. This is the use of these legacy embryos, and as I understood it, while there's some scientific merit claimed for working with them, the holy grail, so to speak, of all this was the cloning for biomedical research that was going to follow on from that process that the Koreans have now improved, if not perfected.
Right.
And I'm wondering whether this is all just now, ethically important in terms of the biomedical progress of these of this research, a kind of backwater, and how important is it?
You mean how important is the legislation that was just passed yesterday?
Yes.
I think it's part of the continuing jockeying on this question with a certain amount of sort of regular domestic politics mixed in.
Okay.
For a number of reasons, I don't think anything is really going to happen. I think the president is probably going to veto this. I think the veto won't be overturned, and we will continue as we now are.
Okay. Then there's another bill coming down the pike from Senators Hatch, Feinstein, Harkin, Specter, and Kennedy.
Right.
That would, as I understand it, legalize and federally fund cloning for biomedical research. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, they want to ban cloning to produce children, but officially endorse cloning for biomedical research.
Would they pay for it on the federal level, or just endorse it?
I think No, I don't think they would pay for it. I think they would simply say they want to outlaw first but make the world safe for the second. Right now the world is safe for both of them. We have no legislation on cloning of any sort.
Right.
And I think that legislation is a very bad idea. That legislation, it's a bit technical, but if you had a ban on the transfer of cloned embryos to start a pregnancy,
right,
but endorsed the creation of those cloned embryos for research,
right,
it would be a felony to do anything other than destroy the embryos.
Right.
And that is a national policy first of all, I don't think it's going to be enacted, and I think it would be a bad national policy to say that it is a crime not to destroy it is a crime not to destroy an embryo.
Are you saying that in a certain sense, cloning for making children is more ethical than cloning for biomedical research?
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
On the grounds that no human life under anyone's view would be destroyed in that process,
no,
at least by intention.
My own view is treating human life as a disposable natural resource is a very problematic thing to do. But in my own view, these new forms of perverse baby making are really the steps to the brave new world. That killing the creature made in God's image is an old story to be fought against wherever possible.
In fact, it's the first lesson that Abraham is taught by God with Isaac, isn't it?
Right. But what's really new is are these various modes of recreating this creature after our own fantasies. And cloning to produce children is a giant step in that direction. This moves procreation in the direction of manufacture. It denies children their right to have exactly two parents, biologically speaking, one father and one mother, both of them adults. The council, in fact, is on record urging that there be federal legislation that would guarantee that kind of right to children.
I understand those as ethical principles. As a practical matter, won't the fact that the South Koreans have improved, if not perfected, the technique for cloning for biomedical research, the only thing that's separating that from cloning for making children is, instead of breaking up the embryo to make the stem cells,
right,
it's implanting it in a uterus. It isn't de facto the any progress such as that's made in the technology of creating clones for biomedical research ipso facto going to make it easier and more likely that whatever the law is that cloning for making children will be happening?
Yeah, no, it does make it more likely. That's one of the reasons that I find the Koreans' work worrisome. A year ago, all kinds of big shot scientists were saying, well, you know, human cloning really is impossible because of things in the mitotic spindle, blah, blah, blah. And then within months of all of these secure pronouncements, here are the Koreans showing how to do it by a technique not hitherto tried. And this does make cloning to produce children more likely. On the other hand, Canada, as recently as a year ago, and other nations have, in fact, outlawed cloning for research, all kinds of cloning, including cloning for research. The UN, in its declaration, called on the nations of the world to outlaw all forms of human cloning.
On the international issue level, let me ask you about that. Senator Brownback's bill, S-658, as far as I understand it, not only would do that in the United States, it would criminalize cloning for making children, cloning for biomedical research, right?
Correct.
And I also think that it. Are you supporting that? Is the president supporting that?
I think the president is supporting that. And if it could be passed, I would support that.
Okay. It also includes, I think, provisions that say if you go to England or South Korea or Singapore and get treated with the products of cloning for biomedical research, you're a criminal.
There was in an earlier version of this legislation some kind of ban on the importation of some products that might do that. I've always thought that was just the height of silliness.
Okay. So could you comment on the ethics as you see it of, let's say, hypothetically, then, that the Daggett-Castle bill passes the Senate, it's vetoed by the President, the Congress upholds the veto, that's the end of that. That the Koreans and the Americans who work with them and the British and the people in Singapore and China who have different ethical systems and a different political situation than the United States go ahead with all this.
Right.
And let's just simplify it and say it's a big success. And the ability to generate nerve cells to help spinal cord victims and Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and every kind of thing is developed. Do you think then it would be ethical for Americans to take advantage of those therapies, even though they've been done in violation in ways that would have been violative of United States law had all
well,
that research taken place?
It wouldn't be a violation of United States
well,
law.
Had it taken place in the U.S. What's the ethics of benefiting from those systems from that research while not doing it within the U.S.?
The question of participating in the fruits of certain kinds of practices
right. That
are immoral is a long and complicated thing. That was, in a way, the question facing the president in the stem cell policy to begin with.
Right?
Could one? In good conscience, support research on embryonic stem cells without being complicit in the destructive deed that created them.
Exactly. My question is, if other people are complicit in that, does one become complicit by benefiting from their work? Yes.
I think it's very complicated. I myself would not, I think, find fault with people who would take advantage of those benefits. However, I think the premises of the question deserve to be challenged.
Okay.
I think the promise of cloned embryo research and cloned stem cells has been vastly overrated. There may be one biotech company that's put its money behind that, but most of them understand that this idea that each person's going to get his own personalized repair kit by stem cells that have been produced from his somatic cells
right.
through cloning, that's a non-starter.
Isn't that what the Koreans have done with this?
That's what they've done, but before you could get that to the point that, think about it. You'd need for each of us to have this kind of option. You would need large numbers of eggs for each of us just to produce the blastocysts, derive the stem cells. Each one of those products, each one of those stem cell lines would then have to be differentiated into the kind of special tissues we need.
Right.
And they would all need FDA approval as a separate drug or biological. You talk to the people in the biotech industry in private, they will tell you this is not the way they're going to invest their money. They're going to try to find some way to take a universal stem cell and solve the immune rejection problem
right.
so that the stem cells that they can work with, that they now have, could be tricked into being put into various bodies without being rejected.
So that would work just as well. You're saying instead of having one stem cell line for each individual
each person
patient,
have some universal stem cell and deal with the rejection problem.
All right.
Also, in the report, the white paper that the Council's really recently produced, we have also indicated that there is another way to get personalized stem cells without going through embryos and without going through eggs at all. If you find ways to reverse the process of differentiation, adult cells back to their primitive state.
Right.
Each of us could start with cells from our own bodies, have them grown backwards, and put back into us without it being even a commercial product.
How likely is that, and is there enough attention being paid to that de-differentiation option?
This is, I think, the place to put your money.
Is the federal government putting much money in that? Should it put more?
I would certainly like to see them put more money into this area. And even since the Council's white paper, Alternative Sources of Human Pluripotent Stem Cells, was released, even when it was in press. A wonderful report given at a scientific meeting at the Salk Institute about a month ago showed that Australian researchers have managed to get nerve cells in mice to revert to something like pluripotency by fusing them not with eggs to create an embryo, but fusing them with existing mouse stem cell lines. So the cell, the final cell remains a stem cell, but instead of the original stem cell nucleus, you've got the donor nucleus in there. If this pans out, by fusing our cells, even with the presidentially approved embryonic stem cell lines, we could have the environment of the stem cell reprogram the adult nucleus to return to its more primitive pluripotency. If that works out, then you really have the opportunity for personalized stem cells. You have the opportunity to produce disease models from whatever disease you'd like, starting with adult cells and fusing them with existing stem cell lines and growing out the now duplicates of the adult stem cell.
All right. Let's maybe the next time we talk start with that point of how adult cells can be essentially reprogrammed as stem cells without having to harm or even think about harming embryos.
Very good.
Okay, good. I want to thank you very much for your time, and I look forward to further discussions of this as the issue proceeds.
Nice to be with you.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.